Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the 12th of April, 2024. It is Friday, delicious, glorious Friday. Thank the maker. We have made it, and the weekend is upon us. Boy, howdy, I'm ready for it. I hope you are, too. If you're not, I don't know what's wrong with you, unless you work weekends. Hope you're doing well. Don't forget, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Going to be a fun one. I can already feel it brewing in my belly. It's... Yeah, won't be as maybe as gross as last one, but, you know, this one won't involve trans prostitutes and climate change like the last one did. Anyway, check it out, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Thank you so much for the support. Please support the program. Let's get started. There is a bunch of news to talk about today. They had a big state dinner at the White House yesterday. The Japanese prime minister was in town, and Jeff Bezos brought his inflatable raft with him. I'd be curious. Look at pictures of Jeff Bezos's fiance. They've been engaged for a while. If I were her, I'd start to worry. But look at pictures of her when they started dating. Look at pictures of her now, and spot the difference. Can you spot the new parts? And you just go, is that, I guess that's what having $200 billion does to you. People will just take it. They'll just go, yeah, no, you want me to have a new what? All right, when? Let's do it. Okay, we're still engaged, right? I get the ring, right, no matter what? Good Lord. Robert De Niro was there with his girlfriend. Like, okay, why? I don't even know if Robert De Niro's ever made him. He made a movie called Ronin, but it wasn't set in Japan. So I'm not really sure why he was there. The Clintons were there. Bill was looking actually pretty good in a nice tuxedo. And Hillary was debuting the new Moo-Moo called the Moo-Moo Moo. I don't know what the hell. It's like someone went out and shot a couch for no good reason, skinned it, and just draped it over her. But, yeah, that was it. And the president had a little press conference almost with the prime minister of Japan. Almost a press conference. He fumbled, lost it. Now, imagine this scenario while you're trying to convince the world that Joe Biden is, he's not old, he's not senile, he's not anything. He's hip, he's with it, he's what's happening. The guy's got a podium in front of him. Podiums aren't that big. Maybe 3 feet by 2.5 feet. And he loses his little note card. He has no freaking idea who to call on. Because he can't just call on somebody. He can't just point. His handlers would be most displeased. And he wouldn't have the question already. Now, granted, without his little note card, he doesn't have the answer either. But you would think, since he'd had the note card with the question and the answer, that he would be able to remember some of it. You can't. He can't do that. So he fumbles. And Joe Biden's, if you're Joe Biden's handlers, the most frustrating thing anybody can, you just sit there and you watch him and you go, all you got to do is not say anything. Oh, you lost your little note card. I don't know how you lose it on this little piece of wood in front of you where there's really nothing else, but you lost it. It's there somewhere. Take a second and find it. Don't announce to the world that you're looking for it, because then they'll know what it is. And all of our efforts to make sure that people don't realize that you're slightly older than dirt are go out the window. Instead, Joe has to vocalize it. Dumb people have to vocalize everything. There's one good thing about being around people who are smart is they get the beauty of silence, right? If there's nothing to say, then you don't have to say anything. Say nothing, right? It's just, hey, we can enjoy some silence together. It works when you're watching a movie. It works while you're having dinner sometimes. Not every moment has to be filled with something coming out of your pie hole. Dumb people have this monologue where they're like, somebody's going to think I'm stupid. I need to open my mouth. And all they do is end up proving it. That's what Joe does here. Why he just doesn't. Now, it takes him, this clip is all of like 8 seconds long. If you don't say anything, if you're sort of leafing through the papers on the piece of wood in front of you, nobody knows anything. Instead, you sound like a kept prisoner of war in need of rescuing in the midst of recording your hostage video.
Third, next question. Who do I call on next? Hang on a sec. I got my list here. Hang on. I apologize. Aurelia of AFP.
Hang on. Hold on. Hey, what's going on? Oh, wait, who am I supposed to call on next? Well, sir, after a thorough reading of the Constitution, you can call on anybody you want as President of the United States. Yeah, granted, the founders did, in fact, put a draft amendment in there that says the president can only call on pre-screened questioners, but that failed to get the full support of the original states. So it is not a part of the Constitution. Therefore, you are free to call on whomever you'd like. Why? Why? You just sit there and you go, what the hell? First of all, well, that's first of all. Second of all, have you noticed how this is never a question? Not just for the president of the United States, because they don't let the reporters hold the microphone. The intern or communications person, whatever, holds the microphone that the reporter asks the question through. In case they go off script, they are told they have their earpiece. And, all right, pull it away. They're going off script. And they never do, by the way. They're all very, very good dogs. But why is Karine Jean-Pierre, who's very historic, never asked about this? Why does the president of the United States need pre-screened questions and questioners? They'll deny, oh, the questions are not there. But we've seen pictures of the note card. Not only does it have the name of the reporter and the outlet they work for, it has the subject matter and the question that they're going to ask. It also has a photograph of the person, because somebody suffering from dementia wouldn't want to be surprised. So an old-timey racist guy from Delaware wouldn't want to be surprised to look up and say, oh, black guy, ah. So he has the picture there ready to go. But there isn't a single question from the White House Correspondents Association members in the White House press briefing about why is it that we have to subject ourselves to this. I mean, the horse left the barn a long time ago on this one. When they did this under Barack Obama, they were absolutely complicit. They were content to do it. Remember, Obama had his notes. He knew exactly who he was supposed to call on. He called on them in order. But he wasn't an idiot fumbling around going, I can't remember where my handlers told me to do this. They've got my daughter off stage and they're going to beat her to death if I don't follow the script immediately. Just wasn't that way. It was much slicker than this. Joe is clueless. Maybe they're threatening Joe with, we're going to read your daughter's diary out loud. That'd have to terrify him even in the throes of dementia. But at some point, doesn't somebody have to step up and go, why is the president of the United States only subject to questions that are screened from pre-screened reporters? Now, occasionally, it should bother everybody. Their job is supposed to be to get questions answered. Occasionally, they do get a response from Joe when he's leaving, because he took three whole questions, and you got to give him credit. It was well past his nap time. And he DVR'd Golden Girls, which might not seem like much of a sacrifice to you, but he doesn't know how to work the DVR. So he goes to the menu and he sees that it's there, but he can't watch it. He can't figure out how to do it. And he ends up deleting it, and it's just a sad thing. But he, the closest you come to a non-rehearsed moment is when he responds to a question shouted to him. They aren't very thorough responses. They aren't very solid responses. But they're responses nonetheless. And granted, they're never from anybody who's asking a serious question. This is Peter Alexander of NBC News and MSNBC. And his question, you're going to hear him shout his question. It's about Arizona, of course. I love these idiot reporters who are like, this law dates back to 1864. Well, wait until you find out how long murder's been on the books, right? Wait till you find out how long a whole bunch of other stuff has been on the books. Hey, you know what? The tax code wasn't created until the 19-teens. Can we just go, it's over 100 years old. Do we really have to abide by this thing? Laws are on the books until they're not on the books. And they're only not on the books when they're actually taken off the books, right? The people who are like, this law's been on there forever, are not outraged that Donald Trump is being prosecuted for laws on the books that have been on the books for a long time that have never been used for anything before. Not anything even like this, but anything. Nobody's been prosecuted under them, but they're like, okay, we're going after Donald Trump. New York is either just about or has just changed the law. They took adultery being a crime off the books. It's a felony to commit adultery in the state of New York. That certainly wasn't, you know, anything modern. It's been around for a long time. It just wasn't prosecuted. I'm surprised, frankly, that the Attorney General of the state of New York or Alvin Bragg down in Manhattan didn't try and throw Donald Trump into prison for that. Actually, that might tell you something about their personal lives, because, you know, those who live in glass houses. But that's neither here nor there. Listen to Joe Biden yesterday. He actually took a semi-spontaneous two questions about, of course, these set the ball right on the tee for him. They're about abortion and they're about Ukraine.
Asking briefly, on the issue of abortion, sir, respectfully, what do you say to the people of Arizona right now who are witnessing a law go in place that dates back to the Civil War here?
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century, 21st century, not back then. They weren't even a state. I find. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
This concludes the press conference.
Sir, how does the House, by the House, the war in Ukraine comes around by the House leader allowing a vote? There's overwhelming support for Ukraine among the majority of Democrats and Republicans. There should be a vote now.
And there he goes, shuffling off. If you watch him move lately, he seems paralyzed from the waist up, which is a weird way to be paralyzed. He's always been sort of paralyzed from the neck up, but never from the waist up. His arms don't sway. It's weird. And he walks like a Clydesdale or something. His knees come. It's very bizarre. But the Arizona question, elect me. I'm in the 20th century. Yeah, you are in the 20th century. You're in the early part of the 20th century, Joe. That's the problem. That's back when you were born. That's the problem. But you got to love the way the reporters jumped in there to try and help him. Because he was about to say something wildly. He was already saying something stupid, but he was about to say something even more wildly stupid. What it was, we'll never know, because reporters jump in. If you watch an interview with Joe Biden with Scott Pelley, Scott Pelley sort of answers when Joe starts to stumble and go, and Pelley will offer him a couple of words going, is this what you're about to say? I know your platform better than you do, because I have it tattooed on my ass. So is this what you're about to say? In the interview with Univision, they did the same thing. The reporter answered when he stumbled, when he was searching for words, when he couldn't figure out, when he was going off track, the guy nudged him back on track. And these reporters, I'm going to play that clip again, because these reporters do it. Just listen to, and I'll stop it after, you don't need the whole thing, but listen to when he starts to talk about, I'm from the 20th century or 21st century, and he is lost. And the very same reporter, Peter Alexander, recognizes this and goes, oh, my God, we can't have that. and jumps in to try and save him. Then Joe kind of snaps out of it or whatever. Somebody in the background is waving a big orange flag or get the hell off the stage. And he says, that's it, folks. Got to go. And everybody starts yelling.
Asking briefly, on the issue of abortion, sir, respectfully, what do you say to the people of Arizona right now who are witnessing a law go in place that dates back to the Civil War here?
Elect me. I'm in the 21st century. Not back then. They weren't even a state. I find... Thank you all very much. Thank you.
That's not me. I elect me. I'm from the 21st... I'm Buck Rogers from the 21st century. I don't know what the hell is going on here. And in rushes Alexander. Well, here's what you do. Here's how you do this. What about this, that, and the other thing? And then his people start screaming, that's it. Get the hell out of here. Grenade. Somebody throw themselves on Joe Biden's mouth so he can't say anything. And they just go on about their business. There won't be any follow-ups about this. Why won't you let the president speak? Why is the president blah, blah, blah? Why is he incapable? What does the president know what century it is? See, that's the really damaging thing. It was pretty clear that he got confused about which century it was. I don't think he thinks it's the 20th century again, but he got confused. He's easily confused. And what does that play right into? A special counsel's report about how he's sort of a doddering old man who a jury would probably find to be, you know, too forgetful to be able to hold responsible. Remember when that he did? What do you mean? How dare you say that he didn't know when his son died? Of course he knew when his son died, and when he was vice president, he knew all that stuff. Will you release the tapes? No, hell no, no way, never. He doesn't know what century it is. I could get it if it's 2001, 2002. I'd even give him up to 2004. I'm feeling generous. But 2024, we're 24 years, so we're almost a quarter away through this century. At a certain point, look, when the year changes and I was writing checks, I don't really write checks anymore, but when I was writing checks, I'd screw up the checks in January for a little while. Every once in a while, I'd screw up a check in February. But usually by Valentine's Day, whatever checks I was writing, I wouldn't have to screw up and scribble an initial or void out the whole thing and start all over again because I'd adapted to it. It was not 24 months later. It was not, it barely took 24 days. We're talking 24 years, and the president of the United States is only just now beginning to realize that maybe, just maybe, it's not the 21st century. Like I say, when you suffer from dementia, when somebody suffers from dementia, the newer stuff goes first. The older stuff is there. You can recount things from your childhood much easier than you can from your weekend. Joe does not seem to know where he is half the time. He doesn't seem to know what's happening with him a lot of the time. And he also appears to live in fear a little bit of the people around him who may or may not judge him or may or may not snap at him if he does something that displeases them. Really, this is, you're just watching unfolding elder abuse in real time. Since Joe is such a jackass and really just an unlikable jerk his whole life, there's not really that many people around. I mean, you raise Hunter Biden, you raise a crackhead who sleeps with his sister-in-law, leaves his wife, all these things, has a kid he won't acknowledge, you don't acknowledge the kid. You begin to see a pattern here that you're not going to have a lot of people who care about. There are two ways to care for an elderly parent. You can actually care for them, or you can talk about how you care about them. The Biden family talks about how much they care about each other. Oh, we're a tight-knit family. Okay. We're super tight. If you're a tight-knit family, we'd pick up on it. You don't have to declare it. If you're smart, you don't have to tell us you're smart. We'll figure it out. If you're funny, you don't have to tell us you're funny. We'll figure it out. If you're a tight-knit family, you don't have to tell us you're a tight-knit family. You have my word as a Biden. We'll figure it out. Methinks the lady doth protest too much when all you do is tell us how wonderful and tight-knit your family is when nothing you do demonstrates it. I'll just leave it at that. These people deserve each other. Looking up at the Twitter machine here, breaking news. Denver mayor, a Democrat, announces he's diverting $90 million of the city's budget to service newcomers. Newcomers. You gotta love it. Newcomers. They have so many euphemisms for people who are, who will insist they're so proud of what they do. They sure find all sorts of euphemisms to obscure what they're doing. Isn't it weird? Well, this is what democracy looks like. We just don't want anybody to look at what we're doing in the name of democracy, okay? That's not democracy then. Oh, it's close enough. It's close. We'll call it a draw. Tie goes to the runner, right? Just, they're hysterical. They all are always surprised when Frankenstein's monster returns to the castle and destroys it. Before we get to the other things, I want to point this out just because this cracked me up. Berkeley, UC Berkeley Law School. Oh, man, hippie central. If there was a nexus of left-wing politics that just belched out idiots, it would be Berkeley, California. And they've been ruining the country ever since. And the people who run the law school, a guy named Erwin Chemerinsky, I believe is how you pronounce it. He's a left winger. He's down with the cause. They all are. They always are. Well, they got a dose of their, him and his wife got a dose of their own medicine. There's video. It's 18 seconds long. It's not worth playing because you can't really understand it. They need to see the confrontation. They invited graduating law school students to their home for a dinner to celebrate them. And, of course, 60 people said yes, they showed up and they were at the dinner. And a group, small group of them were left-wing nut jobs wearing the Arafat doilies and everything. You just got to love these people. They don't have a damn clue. Just go over there. You wouldn't last 10 minutes. They would rape and murder you in a heartbeat. And they're like, what's going on? I'm on your side. That's great. It reminds me of those BLM protesters marching in Washington, D.C., and the kids in their apartment going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then somebody threw a rock and smashed the window. Like, what are you doing, man? We're on your side. Like, they don't care. They don't care. They're about destruction. They don't think rationally. They're not smart people. They're drones. There's no critical thinking going on here. So this idiot protester wearing the Arafat doily and the headscarf goes, oh, Israel, blah, blah, blah. Nobody should be eating while Palestine isn't eating. And like, you're extra apple bottomy to be sitting around talking about how nobody should be eating. Maybe you should be eating a little less. But the wife and the husband, the wife is a law professor, and the dean of the law school comes and says, this is our home. Get out of here. And she will not go. She will not leave. She has been told by a left-wing activist group that her First Amendment rights somehow extend to this person's home and private property. It does not. And now people who have been aiding in churning out these left-wing activist lawyers who make normal people's lives hell every chance they get and are annoying as all get out are now facing a big dose of their own medicine. They're realizing, and I imagine there are a lot of progressive Jews who are really having the I'm a progressive first thing tested as the progressives reveal themselves to be the rabid anti-Semites they've always been. I think there are a lot of Jews who are going, wait a second, we're your friends. There were a lot of people who were turned in by their friends in Nazi Germany, too. A lot of Jews, a lot of gypsies, a lot of homosexuals turned in by their friends. But we were friends, but things have changed. Things are different now. Now I see you for what you are. And they always have that moment, that epiphany of like, how did this happen? Well, it's you just don't know history, do you? You're just wildly ignorant of how the left operates. It's not about individuals. It's about the philosophy and the mindset that it instills in people. It's them. It's their way or the highway. And nothing is more important. They'd turn in their own parents for wrong think. So then Chemerinsky, the dean of the law school, he released the following statement yesterday about the incident at his home. And he seems genuinely surprised. He says, "I write this with profound sadness. Since becoming a dean, my wife and I have invited the first-year students to our home for dinner. We were asked this year by the president of the third-year class to have the graduating students over for dinner because they began in fall 2021 when COVID prevented us from having dinners for them. We were delighted to oblige and designated three nights, April 9th, 10th, and 11th, that graduating students could choose among. I never imagined that something we do to help our community would become ugly and divisive." No, you just thought it would always inflict itself on other people. Now, like, I can't believe the monster I created is attacking me. "Last week, there was an awful poster on social media and bulletin boards in the law school building. A caricature of me holding a bloody knife and fork with the words in large letters, 'No dinner with Zionists, Kim, while Gaza starves,'" end quote. "I never thought I would see such blatant anti-Semitism with an image that invokes horrible anti-Semitic tropes of blood libel and that attacks me for no apparent reason other than I am Jewish." Welcome to the party. See, they're so used to other people being attacked. And they just sit back and say, "Well, it's a shame. That's too bad. They have a First Amendment right to do whatever you want. Oh, you want to speak on campus?" Instead, they burn down the student center where you were supposed to speak. Well, it's just them exercising their First Amendment rights. Oh, you tried to give a talk somewhere, and a group of 18 people just stood up and screamed every time you opened your mouth. Well, you're allowed to speak. They're allowed to speak. It's perfectly fine. It's perfectly normal. It's perfectly acceptable. You unleash enough of those monsters on the world. Forgive me if I don't have any sympathy when they come back after you, even if they come back after you with something really horrible and ugly, because they always do. "Although many complained to me about the posters and how deeply it offended them, I felt that though deeply offensive, they were speech protected by the First Amendment. But I was upset that those in our community had to see disturbing anti-Semitic posters around the law school." Okay. "The students responsible for this had the leaders of our student government tell me that if we did not cancel the dinners, they would protest them. I was sad to hear this, but made clear that we would not be intimidated and that the dinners would go forward for those who wanted to attend. I said that I assumed any protest would not be disruptive." See, I assumed that any protest would not be disruptive. Has he lived on Mars for the past 10 years? Why would you assume the radical left would do anything that is not disruptive? Well, you do that because you're part of them. You help train them. You help enable them. You empowered them. You encouraged them. Look, as your father, you know, those are the people they hate the most. But they hate everybody. You've trained them to hate. It's like beating a dog into being the ultimate guard dog and then being surprised that it bit your kid. What did you think was going to happen? I didn't think they'd be disruptive. Oh, yeah, no, because they just burned down like 20 cities in the last couple of years and tried to kill police officers left and right and constantly attacking. Why would you ever think that they'd be disruptive? Not to you. See, the subtext is, I never thought they'd be disruptive. To me, I'm on their team. "On April 9th, about 60 students came to our home for dinner. All had registered in advance. All came to our backyard and were seated at tables for dinner. While guests were eating, a woman stood up with a microphone, stood at the top of the step in the yard, and began a speech, including about the plight of the Palestinians. My wife and I immediately approached her and asked her to stop and leave." The woman continued. It's hilarious, actually, if you think about it. This guy is completely taken, he is surprised by what he helped create. The people he churned out, these are law students. He's the dean of the law school. Is he unaware of what's been happening on his own campus? My wife, blah, 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 leave. She continued. When she continued, there was an attempt to take away her microphone. Repeatedly, we said to her, "You are a guest in our home. Please stop and leave." About 10 students were clearly with her and ultimately left the group. The dinner, which was meant to celebrate graduating students, was obviously disrupted and disturbed. I am enormously sad that we have students who are so rude as to come into my home, in my backyard, and use this social occasion for their political agenda. Now, your home, your backyard, your front yard, your side of the house, it doesn't matter, screw you guys, but their home and their backyard, oh no, don't do that. The dinners will go forward on Wednesday and Thursday. I hope that there will be no disruptions. My home is not a forum for free speech. Well, suddenly, the law professor gets an understanding of the First Amendment. But we will have security present. Any student who disrupts will be reported to student conduct and a violation of the student will be reported to student conduct and a violation of the student conduct code is reported to the bar. He's threatening them now. All that work you did for 3 years, I'll wipe it out. You want to go and protest some cake, the company that won't bake a cake for some favored group you like, then I'm down with you. But if you dare disrupt my brunch, there'll be trouble. He finishes, "I have spent my career staunchly defending freedom of speech. I have spent my years as dean trying hard to create a warm, inclusive community. I am deeply saddened by these events and take solace that it is just a small number of our students who would behave in such a clearly inappropriate manner." Signed, Irwin. He really does not like a good dose of his own medicine. Now, I love it. It's just a small group of people. A small group of people, as you should know, Dean, can do really, truly horrible, awful things. A small group of committed people. Now, you might want to look at the curriculum you've been enforcing in your university and the courses you've been teaching and the way in which you've been teaching them, because you have created these people. The code of ethics that I'm sure you congratulate yourself for having as dean of the law school, we hold people to the highest of standards. These people are products of that. Maybe you'd want to look into that. If you're looking at a group of 60 people and 10 of them are this way, that's a pretty high percentage. That's not statistically insignificant. You might want to wonder what you're doing, what you're teaching people, and why it is you're teaching people. It's amazing how until it hits home, progressive leftists are indifferent and oblivious. Well, they're oblivious to most of the extent, and when they find out about it, they're indifferent about the damage and the destruction that they cause and what they inspire and what they fund. Remember when Harvard was being exposed, like the professor, the Claudine Gay, the president of Harvard, wouldn't denounce anti-Semitism, wouldn't say, "Hey, you know what, calling for genocide of Jews, you know what, you can't really say that that violates, as long as you don't actually commit genocide, you can call for genocide of Jews. But if you use someone's wrong pronoun, we'll run you off campus." And a whole bunch of the filthy rich funders of Harvard, including in particular, it seems to be led by a guy named Bill Ackman, who's a hedge fund guy, a multi-billionaire, who has led the charge against getting rich Harvard alums to stop donating to them. He was horrified. Oh my goodness, what is going on? And then the further he looked into it, the more horrified he became. There was a whole bunch of professors, now a member of the board of the Federal Reserve, has been credibly accused and sure looks like they've engaged in plagiarism. There are all sorts of anti-Semitic tropes and attitudes and attacks all over these college campuses, all over these elite university students feel afraid justifiably so. Not only you don't have to be, they don't just hate Jews. They hate anybody who goes, you know what? Israel's our best ally, and it's the only real ally in the whole region. They just hate. And the people who have been throwing money on this fire, been throwing money and throwing money and throwing money, are shocked, taken aback. My goodness. Oh, my God. You mean there's gambling in this casino? You mean that there's anti-Semitism here? Well, where have you been? It's all been bubbling under the surface. There's violent mobs going around attacking Jews and putting up anti. It was all well and good when the violent mob went around attacking capitalists, attacking people, you know, people who like the United States. It's when it becomes personal to them. Ackman is Jewish. Once it becomes about Israel and anti-Semitism, he's like, wait a second, what the hell? It finally woke him up. Why was he still asleep when it was just straight white men? The root of all evil. He's a straight white man, too. But he didn't care. That wasn't personal. What's weird is his wife is a, Ackman's wife is a college professor somewhere, Rutgers or something. Some impressive university. And immediately upon his being critical of what the left was doing at Harvard, these same leftist anarchist monsters, they're not really anarchists. Anarchists want no government. These are totalitarians. They're fascists, really, but that's semantics. They all started going after his wife. They all started going after his wife. And once Ackman said, oh, my goodness, you've got a plagiarist as the president of Harvard, they went after his wife saying, well, she plagiarized too. Here, she did this. I don't know if she did or not. I didn't care enough to look it up. But I found it interesting. This guy was a hero to the left. He was a funder of the left. And now suddenly he's like, wait a second. You are attacking me. I'm the dog breeder. I'm being eaten by a bunch of pit bulls. What the hell is going on? Yeah, well, that's what happens. That's how it works. Now, there aren't nearly enough of these people caring about it because Ackman was naive. Ackman was seemingly oblivious to what was going on. Like, well, I didn't know it was this bad. I didn't know it was like this. You know, which means that he knew it was a little bit bad, but he didn't know it was this bad. And as long as the mob, the violent mob, is attacking people you don't like, you don't really care. Right? You don't really care. Seattle had riots and they're going to burn down the courthouse and they're going to do the federal courthouse and blah, blah, blah. And the mayor of Seattle is talking about how they really just support the people's right to peaceably assemble and blah, 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 blah. And then they did the autonomous zone and somebody got killed. They said, all right, well, we can't have that. It's a little too far, but still support your friends. And then they tried to burn down the building his condo was in. Then suddenly it got real. Like, oh, wait a second. We need to do something about this. Maybe we shouldn't defund the police. It all became personal. When it was the cops who were having bricks thrown at them, fireworks launched at them, it was, oh, it's just a shame because it was mostly peaceful. I mean, aside from the people trying to commit murder, other than that, it was mostly peaceful. But when it tried to murder him, it's suddenly no longer mostly peaceful. It's suddenly no longer peaceful at all. It's kind of weird how that works, don't you think? You watch all this stuff, and that's how it works. It has to get personal for these people, for them to realize it. Now, we'll see what happens with Ackman as time marches on, as I'm sure undoubtedly when he's pledging like $1 billion to Harvard, and he's got that on hold, and he's got a whole bunch of other rich people putting their money on hold, that he will have some influence. It might not be open and blatant and obvious, but it will be there. I'll be curious to know if he goes back to sleep. I'll be curious to know if the dean and his wife of Berkeley Law School, now that they've gotten a little bit of a taste of this in their own home, if they'll go back to sleep as long as they are not the targets. It's wildly hypocritical. It's not surprising, but it is wildly hypocritical. And I would say that the smart money is on, yes, they will go back to sleep because it's just easier. It's just easier because progressives are progressives first and anything else a distant second. I'm looking at this. Okay. I was going to go. We'll go to what's her face in a second, Maxine Waters. But this just came across. And you sit there and you go, what in the hell? It's going on. Business. A headline from The Intercept. Biden administration fears Iran might target U.S. forces over Israel strike. The subheadline, Iran threatens to attack U.S. if it assists Israel in defending against any Damascus retaliation. Yes, a couple weeks ago, Israel killed a couple of terrorists in Syria. And Iran, they were, of course, Iranian. And Iran didn't like it very much, and to which I say, tough. But if we had a strong president, this wouldn't be a story. If we had a strong president who loves America, this would precipitate action, preemptive action. Because when somebody tells you what they're going to do, especially a terrorist state like Iran, believe them. And that's just not where the left is. The story, the White House is worried that Iran might strike a U.S. target as part of a potential retaliation for Israel's April 1st attack on its embassy in Damascus, Syria, according to notes from a meeting involving National Security Council officials earlier this week. Tehran has vowed that Israel will be punished for the Syria strike and the killing of Quds Force Commander Mohammad Reza Zahedi. Yeah, who's currently roasting in hell. New concerns about a potential airstrike comes even though the Biden administration has sought to distance itself from the Israeli airstrike, stressing it had no advanced knowledge of the operation. Again, the coward's way out. Quote, I don't have anything more to say about the strike in Damascus, except we weren't involved in any way whatsoever. End quote. NSC spokesperson retired Admiral John Kirby said on Monday. On Monday night, Iran conveyed to the Biden administration that if it involves itself in defending Israel, were Tehran to undertake a retaliatory strike, it would consider the United States a viable target as well. The issue was discussed at a Tuesday National Security Council meeting, according to notes reviewed by The Intercept. Do you imagine? Iran has told the White House that if the U.S. defends Israel against its forthcoming retaliation for the Damascus strike, it will consider the U.S. a viable target as well. Well, then it's war. Or it's a preemptive strike. Hey, you tell Tehran, you know what? We now have programmed in the MOAB, the mother of all bombs. It's not what the MOAB stands for. I forget what it is, but it's a massive, massive bomb. We have now targeted five of them at each one of your nuclear sites. We will drop them without any hesitation should you attack the United States. Should you harm one soldier, even by accident. If you hit an American tourist on vacation in Jerusalem, and you just launch a terror attack, whatever it is, we will wipe out your nuclear program. And we also know where you live. You might not be home. Then again, you might be home. But we'll destroy all of your homes. In fact, we'll start tracking you. And we may or may not attack you. We may or may not bomb your vehicles. We may or may not bomb your location. But you go ahead and you rattle your saber. And if you want to take on the United States of America, you can take on the United States of America. But recognize that this is not Joe Biden's United States of America. Well, actually, they recognize that it is Joe Biden's United States of America, and therefore they don't really have to worry about anything. Am I calling for a ground invasion of Iran? No. But strategically, if our government should be able to, and if we can't, we need to dismantle the intelligence community right now and start over and fire literally everybody involved in it. We know where the critical points are, the pressure points are in Iran. There are a lot of people, the majority of the Iranian civilians, who don't really like living under an Islamo-fascist regime. If we softened up a whole bunch of targets over there with airstrikes, coupled with forewarning to rebel leaders and perhaps some weapons to them, we might be able to overthrow that government pretty quickly if we wanted to. It's a testament to just how weak our government has been in the last 40 years that we haven't done it. But they haven't really telegraphed punches like this. They've certainly punched and should have had this done to them. But if you say, hey, look, we're going to cripple you and then we're going to empower and support your civilian population to overthrow you. You want to play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. And then you see what they do. A real president with something in their underpants besides last night's dinner would also add that these rules apply should you attack Israel as well. But again, we don't have that. We have a Ken doll in the White House. There's nothing going on in the head or the underpants. But to just sit there and watch this and go, well, we didn't have anything to do with that attack. We didn't, swear to God, please don't. That's what weak countries do. That's what weak countries do. I'm not saying we've got to be walking around like, puffing out our chest, peacocking around the farm. But when dealing with Iran, where has appeasement gotten us? Nowhere. It's gotten them a hell of a lot closer to a nuclear bomb. Barack Obama gave them everything they need for a nuclear bomb on the promise that they not get a nuclear bomb for a couple of years. They don't do it on his watch. It's weird. It was the same thing Bill Clinton did with North Korea. North Korea is trying to develop a nuclear weapon. Well, Bill Clinton comes in and says, hey, man, you guys can't do that. I'll tell you what. I'll give you everything you need for a nuclear bomb as long as you don't use it for that. All right? You can use it to turn on some lights somewhere, but just don't use it for a bomb. And guess what they did? Guess what they did? Same thing with, except Obama coupled it with, here's, pallets full of a couple of billion dollars worth of cash, untraceable, that you can use to fund terror around the world. North Korea had a singular focus. They wanted to develop the bomb. Kim Jong-un was afraid that the United States was going to invade. It was actually Kim Jong-il at the time, I believe. But Iran isn't afraid. They don't have that immediacy. They hate everybody, not them. Most of their Arab neighbors hate them. Honestly, a real president with America's interests at heart would use this as a chance to say, all right, we're going to do this. Like I said, you go ahead. In fact, we might act preemptively now because we believe you. We believe you, and then in order to defend Americans, we should act before you do. And we're going to involve Jordan. We're going to involve Egypt. We're going to involve Saudi Arabia. They're all put on notice. We're going to work out a plan with them that we're just going to decapitate your government. And we will destroy the Quds forces. We will destroy your enforcement mechanism internally, and then good luck to you. We maybe won't go after all of you in government. We do want something for the public to rip apart for 50 years of oppression. So, the Benito Mussolini model of regime change, I think, would come to mind. And you put that thought in these people's heads. And then you will really be testing their belief in those 72 virgins sitting there on the other side of hell waiting for them, wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be interesting to see how many of them, if they change their tune? True believers wouldn't change their tune. They'd be waiting. They'd only be postponing paradise. But it's weird how it's a group of people who are very convincing when it comes to convincing weak-minded, uneducated peons to go strap bombs to themselves and go blow themselves up in open-air markets. It's a different tune altogether when it's the people with the cushy jobs and the hotel suites and the prostitutes being shipped in from overseas for their pleasure. It's a totally different tune. It's weird, right? So I want to turn back from international terrorism to domestic terrorism with Maxine Waters. Yes, and the left. And you've got the people running the School of Law there at Berkeley going, oh, I can't believe that this comes back to bite me in the butt. Yeah, it's weird how that works. A big old dose of your own medicine. Well, Maxine Waters was, I assume this is a podcast. I don't know what it was on. She's sitting in her office, probably in her home. And she's a one-trick pony. She's a very wealthy woman. She wins with 72% of the vote pretty easily every time. She doesn't have to worry about much, but she raises a ton of money. Because when Democrats were in charge, she sits on the House Banking Committee, and she was chair of the House Banking Committee. And guess what? Banks throw a lot of money at politicians who are the chair of the government committees, the House, congressional committees that oversee their industry. And since Maxine Waters doesn't have, she doesn't face challenges when it comes to re-election, she's going to win. The closest thing she'd have to a challenge would be in the primary, but nobody's going to challenge her. She doesn't even, you want to know how pathetic her district is. She represents, I think it's Watts or it's South Central Los Angeles, whatever it is. It's an economically depressed area, as you might imagine, with an area that would elect Maxine Waters for decades. But she don't live there. She lives in Beverly Hills. She is filthy. She's got millions of dollars. She's not about to live around people who are, you know, if any of her constituents were caught in the neighborhood that she lives, she'd be the first one to call the police. There's a suspicious person out here. We're going to need the SWAT team to come and protect my property. It's weird how that works out. But you keep getting reelected. You go, hey, what could it possibly do? I've always had the analogy that she, you know, any of these politicians could hold a press conference daily, a month, starting a month before the election, and the entire press conference is just them doing 5 minutes about how stupid their constituents were while simultaneously whipping puppies by the tail into a wood chipper. And she'd still squeak by with 70% of the vote. Is that thinking too little of her constituents? Honestly, I think it's thinking too much. I think her vote total might actually go up. But that's just me. But that's what we're dealing with here. That being said, there is nothing, and I mean nothing, on the left that people on the left want, that they crave, that they need. They love it the way that Hunter Biden loves underage prostitutes and cocaine as victimhood. They love victimhood. They need it. They crave it. It's currency. It's Bitcoin. They're all early adopters, and they want to buy as much as they possibly can. And so Maxine Waters, who is one of the most privileged human beings in the country, paints herself as a victim. Now, it's difficult for her to paint herself as a victim because nobody's running around saying, screaming racial slurs at her. She's a member of Congress, so she's one of 535 elite people. She's a multimillionaire, like, you know, if only we were all so oppressed as Maxine Waters has been. She also employs her child on her, quote, campaign and pays her six figures a year. To do what? She operates a newsletter. Seriously, $120,000 a year to lick stamps. Wouldn't you take that job? Especially now that all stamps are pre-moistened and stickered. You don't even have to do anything. And you just go, this is a hell of a thing. Yeah, that's the Democratic Party. Well, she needs to find a way. She needs to manufacture a way because she craves it so much to claim victimhood status, to claim to be a victim of racism. And since nobody's running up to her, dropping the N-word at her or punching her or treating her like her constituents treat, say, Asian women, she just makes it up. The new racism used to be, this is the ultimate microaggression, is disagreeing with Maxine Waters and telling her so.
As a member of Congress with people, you know, who evidently had a racist attitude and recently one even confronted me in a restaurant, and they don't say racist things, but right. What they say is they don't like something I said. They don't like a position that I took. But you know that, you know, if you were not Black, you would not be approached that way.
Right, they probably would not. Right, they would think twice about doing it. They think that they can get away with doing it with you and that you're Black.
Yeah, they think they can get away with doing it because you're Black. Yeah, that's it, exactly. It could just be that you're a steaming pile of excrement. they don't like you. It might be that they're not a big fan of whatever policy it was that they said. But no, 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 no. They were white when they came up to her in a restaurant and disagreed with her. So clearly it had to do with race. Who's inserting race there? It's just weird. The people engaged in racism are usually the ones who, well, the better way to put it is the people who cry racism the loudest are usually the ones engaged in it the most. But since Maxine, sweet, sweet, nourishing Mama Maxine, wonderful. And by the way, if you ever run into her, you should let her know that you find her to be rather contemptuous, disgusting. You use some colorful metaphors. Go ahead. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you went up to her and said, ma'am, I just want to register my complaint. I disagree with how you voted on this important issue to me. She's thinking you're a Klansman. Doesn't matter if you're black. It doesn't matter if you're white. Doesn't matter. She will just describe you're basically just you're Hitler incarnate. You're a Nazi. You're a racist. You're a whatever. So you might as well get a little expressive with the colorful metaphors. You should get around her, get a crowd around her, and let her know that you're not going to, she's not welcome anymore, anywhere. That seem a little bit harsh? Chant her, get in her face, make a crowd around her, whether it's at a gas station, a mall, a restaurant, wherever it is. If you see her or any of her Democratic Party contemporaries, you should gather a crowd around them. Maybe spread word on social media where they are so that more people can come and join. And you should let them know that they are not welcome anywhere anymore. Oh, wait. That sounds a little bit harsh, doesn't it? Well, let's listen to what Auntie Maxine had to say when it came to members of the Trump administration and see if this is just another example of one of those situations where you give a Democrat a good old dose of their own medicine.
Already, you have members of your cabinet that have been booed out of restaurants. Yeah. Who have protesters taking up at their house. Yeah. Who's saying no peace, no sleep. Yeah. No peace, no sleep. And guess what? We're going to win this battle because while you try and quote the Bible, Jeff Sessions and others, you really don't know the Bible. God is on our side. Yeah. On the side of the children. On the side of what's right. On the side of what's honorable. On the side of understanding that if we can't protect the children, we can't protect anybody. And so, let's stay the course. Let's make sure we show up wherever we have to show up. And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere. We've got to get the children connected to their parents.
Oh, you're not welcome. Oh, wait. No, that's exactly what she is advocating for. Now, granted, she's, what, 83 years old? But still, she's more than that. She's 85 years old. Still, she wouldn't call for something she herself would not expect, right? She would not call for something she herself would not encourage, right? That would be wrong. That would be hypocritical. Maxine Waters isn't a hypocrite. She would never do that, right? So if you see her, let it be known. Let her know that she is not welcome anywhere. Oh, she'll undoubtedly give you a big old piece of her own mind, but you get enough people around her and you get enough people vociferously pointing out how displeased you are with her particular vote or what have you, she'll more than likely flee. Oh, she'll go regale somebody on MSNBC with a tale of how she escaped a mob with pitchforks and torches and what have you, but you will have gotten your point across. See, Maxine, Auntie Maxine, when you get a big old dose of your own medicine, then you begin to realize that what you've been inflicting on everybody else is just a giant spiky suppository It's a real pain in the ass, if you will. Of course, for you to get a big dose of your own medicine, we first have to get you to remove your head from there, which takes a little bit of time, and we'll give you a moment to get your hair done because, you know, corn and all. But honestly, when it gets to this and you get these leftists out there and you find that disagreement exists, and disagreement, rather than being treated as disagreement, is treated as though it is some kind of hate crime. Spare me when you talk about the idea of, you know, you are being oppressed. Spare, if disagreement is a hate crime, spare me that you care about democracy. Spare me all of this crap. Spare me every last bit of it. You are fomenting hatred, and that's fine. That's fine. You're free to, and you certainly deserve it. And it's genuine. Nobody's going to question the sincerity of it. But it is just one of those damn things where you sit there and you go, this is where the left lives. They can't engage on issues. They are desperately trying to create a new George Floyd situation. They need a new George Floyd situation. There is a situation right now in Chicago. They're trying to manufacture it into something. A guy named Dexter Reed was shot and killed. Oh, police headline from the Washington Post. Why this is a national story, I don't know, except for the fact that they desperately want to create something out of it. They need a new St. George Floyd. They're using, oh, there's a wonderful picture of him in his gown. Oh, isn't it wonderful? The Washington Post headlined, police fire 96 shots in 41 seconds, killing black man during traffic stop. Horrible. It's enough to make you cry. Dexter Reed's mother remembers the last time she saw her son alive. Quote, Mom, I'm going for a ride, he told her, before heading out in the car that he had purchased just 3 days earlier. Reed, 26, was killed that same day when a tactical unit police officers fired 96 bullets at him within 41 seconds, according to Chicago's Civilian Office of Police Accountability, or COPPA, which investigates allegations of police misconduct and police shootings. He was just riding around in his car, Dexter's mother said. They killed him. He fired at police first. Yeah, he had a gun in the car. His gun had 11 rounds in it. He'd gotten them all off. You sit there and you go, my God, there, 96 shots in 41 seconds. Yeah, there were a whole bunch of police officers. There was a standoff. They didn't just walk up to there. I couldn't help but notice you ran that stop sign. Let's open fire on the car. But the left leaves all that out of it. His mother had a press conference where she wore her best orange wig and passed out. Oh, how fake passed out. How heartless. Yes, it is heartless. So I'm sick of this crap. There are serious instances of racism in the world, of course, but all of it are buried under these stupid, manufactured instances that the left creates. Dexter Reed wasn't killed until he'd emptied his weapon, basically, or was killed in the process of emptying his weapon. He fired first. He fired 11 shots. A group of officers fired back and killed him. The mother doesn't seem to care or want to talk about the fact that her son, the cops didn't run up and say, here you go, kid. Here's a gun. This wouldn't be a good fun standoff if you didn't have a gun. Here's one of our guns since you don't have one. No, he had a gun. He had a gun. And he used it. Might I say, might I speculate, I don't know the specifics of this because they're hard to find because it's all filtered through a news lens that doesn't mention that he fired first or that he had a gun until well into this. But maybe, just maybe, politicians and community leaders telling everybody they're never going to get ahead and police are out to get you and they're going to kill you. Maybe that might have something to do with it. You sap people of aspiration. You sap people of a bit of their humanity. And then you tell them that everybody's out to get them. Society's coming to get you. The system is coming to get you. Maybe then during a police stop, somebody gets a little jumpy. Somebody does something stupid. Or maybe just people commit crimes and they don't want to be held responsible for those crimes. And for some weird reason, they think they can get out of it if they just shoot their way out of it. Whatever it is, this is not... This is a righteous shooting. This is a righteous event. It will not be portrayed as such. It'll be Michael Brown all over again. It will be Officer Darren Wilson all over again. Oh, he killed him. Hands up. Don't shoot. And then, oh, yeah, okay. Well, aside from the fact that Michael Brown was attacking him, that he had powder burns on his hand because he was trying to grab the gun when it first went off inside the police car, and he was actually charging the police officer when the police officer shot him. Facts have a funny way of upsetting and upending pretty damn much near everything Democrats say. It's weird, isn't it? By the way, in this Washington Post story, let's see, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's quite a ways in before they get around to saying, oh, yeah, Reed shot first. According to COPPA, police stopped Reed for purportedly not wearing a seatbelt. In several body cam videos, multiple officers can be seen exiting an unmarked vehicle and surrounding Reed's car, which had tinted windows. The officers demanded that he unlock and open the door and not roll up the windows. He apparently was not complying with anything. Again, comply with police. If you want to live, don't fight a cop. It's just the easiest way to do it. Quote, upon stopping Mr. Reed, multiple officers surrounded the vehicle while giving verbal commands. When Mr. Reed did not comply with these commands, officers pointed their firearms at Mr. Reed. End quote, COPPA said. Officers can be seen retreating as they asked Reed to exit the vehicle. Then shots can be heard. COPPA said it reviewed the footage, and initial reports appear to confirm that Mr. Reed fired first, hitting one officer while four others returned fire. Yeah, it's weird how shooting a cop is not the best way to go about elongating life, you know? Hey, what can you do to make my life better? Well, you can eat your vegetables, you can exercise a little bit, make sure you take vitamins, and don't lead a sedentary lifestyle. Or you can try and shoot at police officers. Either one. That's apparently the pathway to health. Reed can be seen staggering out of the vehicle before collapsing onto the road. As officers approached his motionless body, they can be heard telling Reed not to move. A pool of blood can be seen on the ground next to Reed as officers place him in handcuffs. Yes, that's called exactly what they should do. Well, you shouldn't have been pulled over in the first place. Then change the law that you can ride around without a seatbelt, okay? What's the point of... We've got all these laws, but don't enforce them. Democrats, morality, legality, everything about them is situational, which means they actually stand for nothing. It's kind of gross. We will now go to what's the big breaking pop culture news, TMZ reports. O.J. Simpson. Well, let me put it this way. Satan has found the real killer. Finally. Well, I get it. He's somebody's father and all that. And it's not, I don't, but he did cut the heads off two people. I mean, come on. Let's be honest about it. Mini Robespierre here is now found the real killer. He would not, only his battle with cancer was able to stop his search for the real killers on every golf course he could get near when not breaking into hotel rooms and stealing sports memorabilia that was probably stolen from him. TMZ reports O.J. Simpson, one of the most infamous high-profile Americans of all time, is dead after a cancer battle. The former NFL great, who stood trial for the double murder of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend Ron Goldman, in the 90s, only to be acquitted, passed away Wednesday in Las Vegas. This according to family. The family tweeted out to their Twitter followers on OJ's account. OJ used to be active on social media. He'd put out videos of himself. It's very weird. He'd always say, hello, it's me, yours truly. Like, that doesn't make any sense, but whatever. He said, on April 10th, our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. During this time of transition, his family asks that you please respect their wishes for privacy and grace, the Simpson family. Well, I will, after this, grant them that, but I just can't not comment on it because he killed two people. Like, honestly, that's what you're looking at. And the jury, O.J. Simpson was really sort of the downfall of a lot of things where you could have faith in a jury trial, at least some faith, where you go, hey, he did it or he didn't do it. That matters. And the jury and the O.J. Simpson, they took 20 minutes. They said, nah, I am sure. I mean, if you look at all the evidence, there's evidence he did it. But if you put all the evidence aside and you just go, he's black, we're black, I don't like police because of what happened to Rodney King, let's vote to acquit, then, of course, he's innocent, right? I'd like to say that's an oversimplification of what the jury did, but that's what the jury did. Like, they admitted it. They're quite proud of it. Yeah, we did it. We stuck it to him because we didn't like the way that what happened with the Rodney King verdict. Okay, you can be pissed off about the Rodney King verdict, but as a human being, should you go, yeah, but this dude did cut two people's heads off, right? This was the birth, by the way, O.J. Simpson, if you want to hold something else against him, if the two murders aren't enough. He was involved in the start of the trial culture, the court TV. He sent the media into a frenzy looking for the next OJ case and looking for sensational crimes. I think Scott Peterson came after him. If you wonder why anybody gives a damn about the Murtaugh murders or however you pronounce that last name, it's OJ Simpson. It has nothing to do with, oh my goodness, this guy was nationally, nobody knew him outside of whatever Carolina that he lived in. Nobody cared. It doesn't matter. But it was sensational. Like, oh my goodness, wealthy family, killed by, and they thought this will be good for ratings. And Fox is still churning out documentaries about it. It's year three documentary since the verdict. What the hell are you doing a document? Who is this? Who is this? Why should we care? You shouldn't. The fact of the matter is you shouldn't. Just like in the case of, what the hell is this guy's name again? Dexter Reed. You shouldn't care. Did you live in Chicago? Did you know him? You probably didn't know him, and you probably don't live in Chicago. So the fact that he shot at police and got shot and killed himself, you should just be going, oh, okay, well, there you go. It shouldn't be in the Washington Post. There's no way that this is a national news story. Yet there it is, right there. It's under the headline or the heading national. And you go, that's kind of weird. The Washington Post declared Kermit Gosnell's murder trial in Philadelphia, which, if you're playing the home game, is a hell of a lot closer to Washington, D.C. than Chicago is. But they declared Kermit Gosnell probably the most prolific serial killer in American history, the abortion doctor who did performed infanticide, children born alive, and he'd murder them. Women died getting abortion. It was just a horrible thing. And he saved body parts and saved fetus. It was absolutely awful. The Washington Post reporter on the crime beat at that time said, well, why aren't you covering this? Well, it's a local crime story. We don't cover it. Local crimes. It's not Washington, D.C. It's a local crime story in Philadelphia. That's like an hour and a half train ride away from here. We couldn't possibly be expected to cover it. They eventually were shamed into covering it in the bare minimum of way. But they are all over the Dexter Reed story like a rash, even though he fired first. And it's not just, you know, well, that's what the police officer said, because the blue cone of silence, that's, they all look out for. No, it's actually body cam footage. See, it's kind of funny that putting OJ aside for a second. The left demanded body cams on all police officers, right? Why? Because there were so many people going, oh, the police were beating me. The police did this. I didn't do nothing. Nobody did anything. Junkies and, you know, white, black, didn't matter. All these people, degenerates, police. They're people who have regular interactions with police have these sorts of reactions. Oh, he's hurting me. He's hurting me. Putting cuffs on you. Oh, help, help. I'm being repressed. Come and see the violence inherent in the system. They all turn into Eric Idle there in the Holy Grail. And so all these liberal city councils and everything said, well, we need body cams on police officers. We need body cams on police officers. We need to catch these people in the act. This will stop this. And what did they do? They ended up getting a whole bunch of people on camera going, you're a racist, you're doing this, and like, then the pound of weed falls out of their bag, or the coke, or when they shoot first. The body cam footage, while not exclusively exonerating police officers from wild allegations from leftists and criminals and what have you, has done a hell of a job of doing a lot of it. It's weird. Like, oh, my goodness. They shot this poor man. He was doing nothing. Oh, wait. Well, there he is with a gun in his hand. Well, there he is with a. I saw footage the other day of some dude at a hotel in New Mexico or something like that. Big, hairy, white dude playing with a samurai sword. And he, like, charges at the cop with a samurai sword. And guess what? It doesn't end well for him. And it's all on body cam footage. Now, if you wanted to, he's a gun versus a sword. That seems a bit, well, you know what? If somebody gets within 20 feet of you with a sword or a knife or whatever, and then they start charging at you, they can close that gap pretty quickly. Pretty quickly. Put them down. It's justified. And it's on camera. I'm sure the family of Dexter Reed will get a huge settlement from the city of Chicago. And Ben Crump is probably already up there trying to find a more believable shade of orange for his mother's next wig at the next press conference there. And it'll be all about injustice, and the Today Show will dispatch somebody in Good Morning America. They will try desperately to make this into a story, but they will never, ever, ever be able to overrule the reality of the body cam footage where the dude shoots first. You can argue, well, they shouldn't have pulled him over. If he shouldn't have pulled him over, then repeal the law that says you have to wear a seatbelt or you can get pulled over. It's that simple. I love it how, you know, in Maryland and Michigan, I was there when they passed laws in both states about, oh, the seatbelt law, you got to wear your seatbelt. And everybody groused about it and complained about it. And they said, all right, well, we're just doing it to make you safe. And then people complained enough and people were getting pulled over, and then they discovered that, oh my goodness, the breakdown of people, we'd make hay out of it, politicians, then they changed it, said it can't be the reason you pull somebody over. But if you're pulled over for speeding or something, or a dead body dangling out of your trunk, they can also write you a ticket for the seatbelt. And you go, well, then why the hell is the seatbelt thing on the rules at all? A lot of people will get pulled over. They'll take off their seatbelt because they want to dig around, get their wallet, get everything ready. And then suddenly they're going to get a seatbelt ticket. It either should be a law or it shouldn't be a law. Make up your mind. It can't be an also thing. Oh, while we're screwing you for the taillight being out, we figure we'll also screw you for the seatbelt thing. If you don't want people pulled over for the seatbelt, then repeal the seatbelt law. They don't want to do that. I don't frankly want to do that either, because that would mean that our car insurance would just go up even further. You already got 22% over last year increases in auto insurance thanks to Bidenflation and Bidenomics. You want to add in the actuarial calculated liabilities related to bodily injury to people not wearing their seatbelts? But here's an even bigger pro tip. When it comes to you being pulled over, comply with the police officer. I know that it's not a popular opinion to say, But because it's only supposed to be a certain minorities who ever do this. But my father, when I started driving, had the talk with me. No, it wasn't the talk about the birds and the bees. Thank God they never, my mother once tried to have that conversation. It just, no, too late. The, learned that in like elementary school with the first dirty magazines at my friend's house. Like, what is this? And parents never knew how to hide their dirty magazines. I don't know why. And like, also, why do they have, some of them had, maybe I just grew up in the wrong neighborhood. Some of them had stacks and stacks and stacks of them. Like, how many do you need? Right? But whatever. Anyway, he had the talk with me about what to do in interactions with police. See, my father had had run-ins with police. My father was a greaser in the 50s and a troublemaker and what have you. And once a friend of his and him wrestled a cop's gun away from him and threw it over a fence into a junkyard. They pulled him up. He got pulled over and they, whatever. It was just that kind of troublemaker. My dad was really awful as a kid when he was telling the stories. He'd like disappear for a weekend at 15. Just when he'd come home, parents would be like, where you been? I don't know. None of your business. Dropped out of school, all that stuff. He was a hellraiser. He got his act together by the time he was 19 when he got married, but it was like rough go at the time. Drove to Florida when he was 17 years old, 16 years old, with a friend of his. Ran out of money on the way back, and my grandpa had to go down to Ohio and pick him. It's just a mess. He would have beaten the living crap out of me if I did one-tenth of what he did. But he'd wrestled his gun away from the cop, and then the cop later on pulled him and his friend over and took him to the police station, and six cops took him upstairs and beat the crap out of him. It was a different time, 1957 or whatever. It's a different time. But when police, my dad had that talk. Police pull you over. If it's at night, turn on your dome light. Have your driver's license, insurance, and registration handy. Keep it somewhere. Keep your hands on the steering wheel. Put the window down. Put your hands on the steering wheel. Yes, sir. No, sir. If you're going to get any breaks, you're going to get breaks because you're being polite. They're going to not write you. If they're going to give you a warning, they're going to let you go. Whatever it is, it's going to be because you're being polite. You're never going to attitude your way out of this situation, not in a positive way. So don't do it. And if you push them, you're not going to like the results. This was before body cams. This was, they'll just drag your ass out of the car and beat you a couple times and then say, get in your car and get out of here. I knew that. That was the talk, but we're told, oh, no, it's only the talk. Hey, if a cop tells you, put your hands on the steering wheel, put your hands on the steering wheel. Cop tells you to get out of the car, get out of the car. You watch all these roadside things and body cams and stuff and dash cams. Like, police are telling you to get back in the car, stay in your car, and you're getting out of your car. You're an idiot. You are provoking things. And quite frankly, given the number of times I've seen, and you've all seen footage and episodes of cops and everything else, of police getting into a fight with somebody that does not end up in them being killed, it's a bit of a miracle that it doesn't happen more often, because there are a lot of morons out there. There's the morons who just won't comply because I'm not going to comply. You're not going to tell me what to do. And then there's the, I know my rights. I can do whatever I want. Like, you know, through a series of court cases and 20 years of appeals, you might end up being justified in that. Or you could just put your hands on the steering wheel, stay in the car, shut your mouth, and not be a jackass. And you probably won't have to go through 6 years of court filings and legal battles and whatever. But you wouldn't get the civil settlement up there. You got shot in the spine. You're confined to a wheelchair, but you've got money now. Was it worth it? It's not that hard. Enough about that. Enough about OJ. Whatever. I want to play you this CBS News report on inflation. It says things go to hell. Things go to hell all at once. CBS connects 9 of the 10 dots here. What they don't do is bring it to, hey, and it's Biden's spending in his first 2 years, unnecessary spending, when Democrats controlled everything. that is leading to this inflation. So we were told inflation isn't happening, and then it's transitory. Then it's here, but it's supply chain related. Now it's just here. Now it's going away, and we've cut inflation. We've cut, even though inflation is up. Everything they tell you about inflation is a lie, and it all stems from the, what, $2 trillion in new spending that Joe Biden threw at his friends when he first came into office? That's the 10th dot CBS doesn't connect here, but the American people are connecting that dot. That makes this report damaging, even though they don't connect the last one.
For the third straight month, prices have gone up more than expected, from the rising cost of car insurance and repairs to how much you're paying at the grocery store every week.
Do you know how much one of these costs? $2 freaking.
This was $200.
We're supposed to skip the power bill this month so we can buy groceries or the mortgage.
Before the pandemic, all of these groceries, about 30 items, cost $100 on average. Now, 5 years later, according to Nielsen IQ, all this costs 33% more, meaning you'd have to skip about 10 items, like chicken, bread, milk, and bananas to make your $100 budget.
They don't say, and here's why, but they're at least pointing it out. And it not only this, like, everybody knows what goes on in the grocery store when they're there. They may not have had that conversation with their neighbors. They certainly probably haven't had that conversation with people across the country. Now that they're seeing it on national news, they're realizing it's not just them. It's not just their local Kroger or their local Safeway that's screwing them over. It's across the country. It is in the economy. It is baked into the cake. It is the result of policy decisions made by the president and his handlers. Now, it may not be the reason they made those policy decisions, but it may well be, because they don't really care. But it is at least a side effect of it. It is the secondhand smoke of progressive policies, at a minimum. I would probably be tempted to argue that it is part of the design. You're not going to be able to replace the existing system unless you collapse it. And the easiest way to collapse it is to spend it into oblivion, and then inflation and all of that. And then you have people clamoring, help us, help us, help us. And then you can sweep everything aside, because nobody would willingly say, please take away all of my rights and my freedoms and give me government control over things. People wouldn't willingly say that. You have to make the status quo. You have to make it everything. You have to be able to blame the current system, even though you've bastardized the current system. The existing system, and I would argue the old system of the free market capitalism, would take care of, they would have prevented this from ever coming to be in the first place, and would have handled this situation by now were it allowed to. It's not being allowed to. Whether or not Joe Biden and his handlers are trying to crash the system or desperately trying to just limp it into the shop before the election so they're not held to account for it, you can decide for yourselves. I think it's a little from column A and a little from column B. Actually, probably 50-50, to be honest with you. But yeah, CBS News is reporting this and reporting it this way. People will connect that last dot, even if the media won't. As we wrap it up here today, ladies and gentlemen, I want to take a trip into the morning. Good old Morning Joe. Man, they are blissfully unaware. They truly, genuinely are blissfully unaware. For a long time, I thought they were faking it, but they really seem to just, it seems to be real that they are unconscious of what they do and how they do it. It is a sight to behold. On this morning show, they were whining about, and Joe's like whining about how Donald Trump, just people are just tired of him. Just tired of him. Just sick to death of hearing about Donald Trump. And you go, do you not watch your own show? And apparently, they don't. And can you blame them? Why the hell would anybody want to? But you'd be hard-pressed to find anything on their show for the last couple of years aside from like a day when there's major breaking news, maybe, but they probably even made that about him, where it wasn't about Donald Trump. And you go, you talk about Donald Trump constantly. If people are exhausted, as you say, from Donald Trump, a large part of that is because of you. He's not out on the campaign trail every day. He's not doing something every single day, but you can't quit him. You have to get all broke backy on you. So I looked at the guest list this morning and said, Jonathan Lemire, Mara Gay, Johnny Deutsch, Richard Haass, Steve Rattner, Chris Matthews, Molly Jong-Fast, Eddie Glaude Jr., Senator Mark Kelly, Ed Luce, Gary Kasparov, David Hume Kinnerly, Andrea Young, Maggie McGrath, Huma Abedin, John Heilman, Caddy Kay, Al Sharpton, Peter Baker, Ben Cardin, and T-Bone Burnett. Maybe T-Bone Burnett didn't talk about Donald Trump, but every single one of those other people, I guarantee you, talked about Donald Trump. I guarantee you, every single one of them talked about Donald Trump. That's what they do. That's their shtick. That's what the audience wants. You turn on the TV and they go, dance for me, monkey. And they happily dance for you. They throw pennies. You throw pennies at their feet and go, oh, please tell us more about how Donald Trump is terrible. Morning Joe is a whole bunch of fragile snowflakes going, please reinforce my worldview every single day. Don't stray from it. And anything you tell me that's contrary to it, I'll turn off the TV. That's how you can go and watch a network for 3 years, say, Russia collusion, Donald Trump, walls are closing in. And then the Mueller report comes out and they go, yeah, we were wrong about that. And there's no dent. There's no ramifications. Nothing. They looked away for a second, pretended it didn't happen. Now they're right back to Russia collusion. Donald Trump owned by Russia. Listen to Joe this morning whine about how people are just sick of hearing about Donald Trump. Well, that's all they do.
I think the biggest challenge, Donnie, is whether you talk about abortion, the radicalism of that, and the divide. Are what Mika's talking about in the focus groups, everybody, I'm going to divide. I think his great challenge is just the sense of exhaustion.
Yeah.
I was hearing from Trumpers in 2020 saying, oh, I guess I'll vote for him. I don't know. I'm so exhausted by this guy. Every day, it's a different fight. And these were Trumpers that were saying it. That was before January the 6th. That was before he completely went way out there. He was already pretty far out there.
He's way out there. All they do is talk about Trump. I mean, that's all you do. It's like the Marlboro Man bitching that he's got cancer. You're the guy. You did it. But it is blissfully unaware. Oh, they're so sick of it. Now, coming up next, we'll talk to Mara Gay about this, and we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the other thing. I don't know how people get through life that blissfully unaware, except for, you know, they're happy, blissful part, because they probably don't watch Morning Joe. Then along comes Mara Gay, really just a dim-witted individual who is on the editorial board of the New York Times, talking about abortion. This needs no setup.
Pregnancy is actually a very dangerous condition. And so, it's scary enough as it is. And the idea that you would essentially threaten prosecution of doctors, who are trying to actually provide care to human beings in that condition is abominable. And I cannot imagine that this is going to go over well with Arizona voters, and not just women.
Men.
Yeah, men. Men. There's no way. Yeah, men. They're not going to want to practice safe sex or use birth control or kind of. No way. It's men. Men care. Men pay for this stuff because they're like, here's some money. Go away. Problem. And a whole bunch of people acting irresponsibly. But I love how she's like, the doctors are just trying to give health care to the people who need it. What people? You mean women, right? It's women. There's one group of human beings who, dare I say, would be the customer base for abortions. There'd be one group of people, in the whole planet that would be the customer base for it would be women, right? If you're going, again, push a baby through your urethra, yuck, ow, no. But you've got to love it. They can't, the, everything about them, it is so, and if you think Mara Gay did not just come, she doesn't have to, she's trained. They're all trained. None of them said women. Now, they're all trained to provide care to human beings in that condition. Nobody chimed in, you mean women. They don't have to. Anyway, they're all broken. Not broken in the way of damage, but the way you break a horse. You know, the horse will buck and buck and buck, and then it'll eventually go, all right, this thing isn't going to get off my back. It's not so bad. Whatever. They've all been broken. They've all been trained to go, you know, they would need to provide this care to women. No, no, you can't say that because trans men can get pregnant too, or whatever the hell. I can't. I don't know which way the slide rule goes, where there's a baby coming out of a man, because it doesn't happen. It's not real. There's biological reality. The only people that can get pregnant are women. It doesn't matter what you call yourself. It doesn't matter what you pretend to have. It doesn't matter what you stuff in your underpants to pretend is there. It's not going to change the biological reality underneath it. If you are pregnant, you are a woman, period, end of story. And so that they sit there and they go, they want to provide care to human beings in that condition. You mean pregnant women. Pregnant women. And Mika chimes in, well, men care too. Yeah, men care. They care desperately that the woman they got pregnant, both of whom, you know, getting pregnant is as easy to avoid as being hit by a train. You know exactly how it happens. Take precautions and it won't happen. It's really that simple, but no, the New York Times with a new biological reality because they're stupid, stupid people. That is enough for today. That is enough for this week. Quite frankly, I've had enough of me, except for the Week in Effin' Review, which will be up at 12:01 Eastern Time tonight at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Please consider supporting the program and check that out. I'll see you guys later. Have a great one.